Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett just gave his State of the City speech. The Bucks have got to find a new arena at some point in the next few years, and it's the start of an election for governor, so it's a great time to do a newsmaker's interview with Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett. Tom, thanks for sitting down with us.
I'm happy to do so.
You know, I find intriguing the whole debate over the future of the Bucks. Can we start there?
Sure, absolutely.
Well, you made a reference in your State of the City speech to our region's largest indoor entertainment center. The Bucks, as you noted, part of our downtown since 1968. When we interviewed Tim Sheehy, he said there'll be no major recommendations till after the November election. Should the Bucks, any new Bucks arena and expanded convention center be funded in the same regional way as Miller Park, sir?
I think it's going to have to be a regional asset because it is a regional asset. If you look at the attendance at events at the Bradley Center, whether it's Bucks games or Marquette games or any other games, you're probably going to find a very high percentage of the people who don't live in the city of Milwaukee and don't even live in Milwaukee County. Now, they may be coming from the surrounding areas. They may be coming from Waukesha, Ozaukee, or Washington County, or maybe even Racine County. But quite honestly, you've got a situation where many of the people who go to events there have more disposable income. And that means a lot of them don't live in the city of Milwaukee. So I very much consider it a regional asset, and in many ways a statewide asset. The Bradley Center right now is a state facility. It's not a city facility. It's not a county facility. And so there's going to have to be an approach taken that recognizes that this is a regional asset that is located in the center of the region, which is downtown Milwaukee.
Do you see it, do you think, are there other forms of what Henkin at the Public Policy Forum calls a dedicated funding source? Any other sources available than a sales tax surtax?
Oh, I think people are looking at that right now and trying to look at other models around the country. If you look, for example, at places like Rochester, Minnesota, or Allentown, Pennsylvania, they've taken different approaches, and they've been able to capture some revenue from other sources. So it doesn't bring in the whole sales tax fight, but it recognizes that some assets, and again, a downtown entertainment arena would be this type of asset, are really regional in nature, and so need more of a regional funding source.
The last time I interviewed Mr. Henkin, the Public Policy Forum, he pointed out, I think it's Cleveland, a surtax on the cigarette tax. Is that feasible?
I don't think it's feasible under state law.
Okay.
I no one has talked about that at all. I've never heard anybody mention that. So I think that clearly what's going to have to happen here is this is going to be something where the state, which means the legislature and the governor, are going to have to be engaged in this. Because of the nature of Wisconsin law, that whether it's a city, the county, or the region, whoever is making the decision is going to need approval from the state legislature and the governor. So it has to be a two-way street where Madison and southeastern Wisconsin are working together.
What's at stake? Are you afraid the Bucks could be lost, sir?
Oh, I'm very optimistic about the future of Milwaukee. I'm optimistic about the future of the Bucks. I think Senator Cole is clearly committed to this city. He's clearly committed to the Bucks. But he is getting older, and he recognizes, and that's why he's made the decision to bring in new investors, that he's not going to live to be 250 years old. And so I think he's working now to do what he can to make sure that the Bucks stay here. And I'm very hopeful that they'll, and optimistic that they'll remain here.
I understand a county supervisor just today suggested a advisory referendum on a sports and entertainment complex downtown. Would a referendum do any good?
I think right now what has to happen is you have to have the business community, state leaders, local leaders, sit down and come up with a proposal, because until you have an actual proposal, you're just asking questions that are hypothetical questions. At the end of the day, there is going to have to be a real proposal that's going to come forth that people can respond to then. But right now, until that happens, I think that everything else is premature.
Are you in talks leading the groundwork for
such a recommendation? I've been involved with many talks with local business leaders, with Senator Cole. I've spoken to Senator Cole several times and his staff. I've talked to people in other parts of the metropolitan area. But we're going to need some, I think, galvanizing in the next 7-10 months, a year. It's going to have to happen pretty soon.
Just one more question. How do you feel when leaders of Racine County, talk about opting out of the Miller Park District?
I don't think that's going to happen. I think we're getting near the end of the life of the Miller Park tax in the next 4 or 5 years. And so I don't think that at this point it makes any sense to even have that conversation.
Okay, new subject. Do you think the governor's delay of the Kenosha Casino is a sign that it will be built?
I don't know what's going on there. I do know that the Republican Governors Association is raising money, and my understanding is that you have contributions that are being made to that. So I don't know what the driving force is here, but I think that people know right now whether it's going to happen or not happen, and I think you just got to make a decision. But I think that it's pretty evident that the goal is to make this decision after the election rather than before the election, because there are going to be people who are going to be mad. Regardless of what the decision is, people are going to be mad.
Yeah. The law school poll showed the state split on it. Do you think it will not be resolved until the election, based on this extension that the governor
just saw? If the federal government approves the governor's request for an extension, I would bet dollars to donuts that it's not going to be made, the decision's not going to be made until after the election.
And your position on it again?
Again, I've always said that we have enough gambling in the state right now. I don't think that we need to expand. I support where we are right now, and that's where my position has been for probably two decades.
MPS, Superintendent Thornton just announced he's taking the Baltimore job. Are MPS schools better off for Mr. Thornton's tenure, Mr. Mayor?
Absolutely, yes.
How?
If you go back 5 years, on a fiscal standpoint, the Milwaukee Public Schools were like a car going 90 miles an hour towards a cliff. If you looked at the long-term liabilities, if you looked at the costs that it just didn't have any control over, it was out of control. He really, with the help, I think, primarily of President Michael Bonds, righted the ship and made some very difficult decisions, and has now put the school district in a place financially where it will be able to operate in the future. Now, his concern, of course, is the loss of enrollment, and that's a real concern because you still have a lot of long-term legacy costs that are spread over a group of students. But if that group continues to shrink, those legacy costs then get spread over a much smaller group of students. And that is what will cause problems. That's why he talks about market share and wanting to make sure that kids are attending a school that's under the umbrella of the Milwaukee Public Schools. That has caused some issues because some people are saying, well, that means you can't ever have charter schools or you can't have city charter schools. And I think what's happened is he's just decided that he's done as much as he can here. He's always been interested in Baltimore. He applied for that job once before. His family has strong ties. He's from the East Coast. So I wasn't shocked when he made the decision that he was going to go back to the East Coast.
What are you looking for in the next MPS superintendent?
There has to be someone who's going to keep those fiscal reforms in place, but now really has to focus on improvement, the third grade reading scores, graduation rate, and someone who can really deal with the serious issue of suspensions. Because right now you've got a situation for many young teenagers in particular, being suspended is something that is not something that they are embarrassed by. They don't like school. They're not doing well in school. So they're told to go home. Well, what could be better? You don't want to be there in the first place. But even the first suspension dramatically increases, as that number increases, the number of suspensions, the chances that you're going to drop out of school, which is where we have the problems. And so I think you're going to have someone who can come in and really deal with that suspension issue so that you have kids who are disruptive in the classroom, taken out of the classroom, but don't give them what they want, which is to go home. Make sure that you're putting them in a place where they can continue to learn so that it just doesn't become a self-fulfilling prophecy that they're going to be failures. So you've got that issue, again, the reading, the graduation. But I think that the superintendent has started moving all those indicators in the right direction.
You're not interested in refighting the governance issue, are you?
I've always felt that the mayor has to be integrally involved in this. But quite honestly, I was a lonely cowboy. There was not a single elected Republican in the state who was supportive of that. Mm-hmm. Many Democrats were opposed to it. But I think if you were to ask the superintendent or any superintendent who leaves the school district, they would tell you that it's probably more productive to have one or two bosses rather than nine bosses.
Let's talk about public works projects. Are you satisfied with the DOT plans on the Hone Bridge fixing?
The Hone Bridge, we're pleased with the Hone Bridge. We're pleased with the partnership that we have with the state, in particular the access to the lakefront. We were able to work out a compromise with the state that I think the state benefits from, the city benefits from, and the county benefits from. So we're very, very pleased with that We're not pleased with I-94 right now, though.
The east-west freeway?
The east-west freeway.
Right. What are the options there? Is double deck still a possibility?
Well, if you want to add hundreds of millions of dollars in cost, it's still a possibility. I think really what you can do is you can reduce the speed from 50 to 45. That means you can reduce the lane size. And I think that you can get the four lanes that are desired by the state in a much smaller footprint that's not going to disrupt cemeteries or businesses or homes in that residential neighborhood. And you're going to save hundreds of millions of dollars at the same time. That's at the western end of the I-94 project, which is just east of the zoo interchange.
Zoo freeway.
But
yes.
Now you've got issues in the area between the stadium interchange and the Marquette interchange, where they want to move the interstate system about 50 yards to the south. Again, adding, I don't even know what the numbers, it could be tens of millions or hundreds of millions of dollars. And to me, it doesn't make sense to do that. Right now, the crisis we have in Wisconsin is the local roads. And you can go to any local community in this state and people will tell you what I'm talking about. It's the potholes, it's the ice heaves, it's the wear and tear that is occurring on state roads. And the state's response has been, well, we're going to increase the funding next year, 3%, after we've been cut the last couple of years. My response to that is the potholes are there now. The ice heaves are there now. We've had a brutal winter. There is a surplus right now in the state's Department of Transportation budget. Rather than spending hundreds of millions of dollars to expand the interstate system, let's put some of those dollars into local roads, because it doesn't do you any good to have this major expansion of the interstate system if people can't get to the interstate system on their local roads without going through dozens of potholes.
Well, but isn't the issue long-term state transportation funding? Because we're borrowing $993 million in the current budget.
They're spending like drunken sailors. There's no question about that. I mean, and it's this borrow and spend mentality. And I think that people in the state at some point are going to wake up and say, well, wait a minute here. Nobody's making any difficult decisions. They just keep pushing it off, just kicking the can down the interstate system. And at the same time, you've got local roads that are suffering right now.
Do you have any recommendations on how to come up with
put a priority on local roads? That's my strongest recommendation right now.
Raise either the gas tax or what
you can do it in the existing budget. You don't have to spend the money that they're proposing right now on the I-94. Here's the issue. The issue is at the national level, at the federal level, you've got a national transportation fund that is bleeding. At the state level, you've got one that's bleeding. And the reason they're both bleeding is that there's nobody who is responsible. The feds give so much leeway to the state. The state's going to spend the money because they feel they're spending the feds' money. The state says, well, the feds are making us do that. And so what you're having is you've got these expanded interstate systems with people not knowing what the true costs of them are. And so we're still trying to get the costs from the State Department of Transportation as to what it would be to build the I-94 stretch between the stadium interchange and the Marquette interchange in the same footprint. Let's just build in the same footprint. Why would you move it 50 yards to the south?
If nobody's leading on the issue of long-term transportation funding, are you afraid that the zoo freeway and the east-west are going to get drawn out over a much longer period, sir?
Well, I think the zoo is going to get done. Clearly, they're moving forward with the zoo. I don't know about the stadium, but again, I'm looking at this from the local perspective, and we are the casualty in all this. If you look at the drop in funding for local roads, it's because the political might in this state is supportive of expanding the interstate system at the expense of local roads.
Speaker Voss continually, when he's asked about transportation funding, he likes toll roads. Do you consider that any type of a solution?
I don't see anybody being serious about moving forward with toll roads right now. I just don't see it. The governor said he doesn't support it, so I don't know where it's going to happen.
Let's talk about the November 4 election for governor. What's at stake for your city?
Well, let me give you some breaking news. I will not be a candidate.
Thank you.
For governor in 2014.
Having been there, done that, yeah, got the T-shirt, understand?
I think it's really where's the focus going to be. I don't doubt for a second that if Governor Walker is successful, that his priority for the next 2 years is going to be Washington, D.C. I think that the needs of Wisconsin right now are so severe and serious, we have to have a governor who wants to have as their focus the state of Wisconsin. That's what I think is at stake.
Do you think he would come up with, this is my term, not yours, son of Act 10, if he's reelected, sir? Another attack?
Oh, no, I think he's punched that ticket.
Okay.
Now, do I think that there's a desire to make this a right-to-work state? I absolutely think that is something that they want to do. I think that is going to be wholly a political decision. And depending on which way the political winds are running after this election, if he believes that would help him on the national stage, he'll do it. If he feels that Act 10 provides him the credentials to show that he doesn't like unions enough, I think he'll stop there. But there's no doubt in my mind that the end game of this is to make this a right-to-work state, whether it happens in January of 2015 or January of 16 or 17. The people who have pushed in 2011 for Act 10, they have as their end game to make this a right-to-work state.
This interview is occurring exactly 3 years after the Act 10 debate. Act 10 saved the city of Milwaukee money, correct?
We took advantage of some of the provisions that we needed to take advantage of, but I have always said consistently, you did not have to take away the right to organize, you did not have to take away the right to bargain as they did in order to do that. When I say we took advantage, what I'm saying is when you've got the cutbacks that we have seen from the state government, we had absolutely no choice because police and fire were excluded. That's basically 60% of our operating costs.
Yep.
So that's excluded. They continue to get raises. That would have meant that the entire burden would have had to fall on the 40% remaining. We felt that that was just an impossible situation. And so when I say take advantage, we had the gun to our head, and it was like, all right, do you want to have libraries? Do you want to have public health? Do you want to have the Department of Public Works services? Do you want to have neighborhood services? We had to do that, otherwise we would have seen massive layoffs here.
But Act 10 also, you talked about the financial progress with MPS. I think I saw one story, Act 10 saved MPS $1 billion in legacy costs.
But let me correct this, because, for example, in the city of Milwaukee, we were able to achieve at the bargaining table the concession, if you want to call it that, from the union that people coming into the system would pay toward their retirement system. We did that in 2009 before any of this happened. Mm-hmm. Because of the state laws and state constitution, we cannot change that for existing City of Milwaukee employees. So we were able to take the steps to do that. Act 10 did not apply to any City of Milwaukee current employees because of state law. So we're seeing cuts in state aid. At the same time, again, we've got 60% of our costs that are off the table. In fact, they've done things to improve that. And just to give you an example, when the residency debate came up, I said to the Republican leadership, look, these guys want to move out of the city of Milwaukee. What we can do is we can say, all right, you want to move out of the city of Milwaukee, you pay towards your pension. Makes sense? They said no. So now we have a situation with residency where you have police and fire who don't want to pay towards their pension through their payroll. They don't want to pay towards their pension through their property tax. So my question is, who do you think is paying for your pension? And what's been lost in this is my biggest issue is the issue that for political reasons, the governor and the legislature have taken off the table. So don't come to me and say it's been this great savior when it's been just the opposite when it comes to police and fire. Not only don't they have them paying towards their pension, now they allow them to move out of the city without ever paying a penny towards their pension for those people who are on the department right now.
You said you're not going to run for governor, and I understand that. But do you think the defining issue and whether Governor Walker is reelected should be his 250,000 new job pledge, sir?
Well, I think your former employer, the Journal Sentinel, in its editorial endorsing him, certainly said that was one of the primary reasons that it did so. It's had a change of heart in terms of whether governors can have any control over that. But I think the rules have changed a little bit. But I don't think anybody is now saying he's going to reach that goal.
Are you going to play a large role in the Mary Burke campaign?
I'm running the city of Milwaukee right now, and that's where my priorities are right now. I'm supporting Mary. There's no question I'm supporting her. I've known her for years. I think she's a real quality person and a quality candidate.
What should be her central issues?
Oh, I think that there are several things that she's going to focus on. I think certainly integrity in government. I think certainly making sure that you have a governor who is committed to the state and committed to growing the economy of the state. The focus has to be on this state. If the focus is on just having this be a speed bump in national ambitions, how does Wisconsin benefit from that?
Mm-hmm. Points you raised in your city, State of the City speech. Number one, Wisconsin would have qualified for $340 million more in additional funds had we expanded MA. Do you have an estimate on how much of that would have gone to City of Milwaukee residents?
Well, it doesn't translate into dollars like that. Again, this was not these weren't my figures. This was the state, I think it was the Fiscal Bureau,
yes, sir.
That said through 2021, this decision that Governor Walker made and the Republican legislature supported costs the taxpayers of the state of Wisconsin $340 million. Mm-hmm. Now, where would that money go? It would go into the general fund, obviously, or deal with the shortfalls that we have in Medicaid in other areas. And so what does that mean? Dollars are fungible. That means that those dollars are not there. So whether it comes out of health care or education or aid to local governments, I don't know exactly where that money would come from. All I know is that $340 million, for political, ideological reasons, was left on the table.
But because of the poverty rate in your city, doesn't it stand to reason that City of Milwaukee residents would have gotten a substantial chunk of that?
I think you can make that argument. I think you can make that argument. But again, it's not like I'm going to tell poor people you're going to get a rebate check if we take that money. What it's going to mean is that you're going to have the health coverage. And mm-hmm. to me, that's really what this is all about. And what I find disturbing about the entire debate over health care is let's step back a second. Let's just chill. It's good that Americans have affordable health care. That's a good thing. That's what the goal is here. And we get caught up in all the politics of this, but the reality is, if you're a mother with a sick 3-month-old baby and your baby's running 103 temperature and you don't have access to health care, what are you going to do? You're going to take your baby to the emergency room. Mm-hmm. And that is the most expensive and inefficient way to deliver health care. So whether it's mothers with children, whether it's childless adults, let's stop channeling people into emergency rooms. Let's get them the care they need in a less expensive setting. We all benefit from that. But again, there's no doubt in my mind that this money was turned down for political reasons. Just no doubt.
City of Milwaukee, poor residents are healthier because of the Affordable Care Act.
Well, I think hopefully they will be. They will get the health care that they need, whether it's through Badger Care or Medicaid or through the Affordable Care Act.
State of the City speech, comprehensive immigration reform. Should that include a path to citizenship?
Yes, it should. There's no way we're going to be sending back 10, 12, 14 million people to Mexico. It's just not going to happen.
How big of an issue is that for the city of Milwaukee, sir?
Well, I can tell you that the fastest growing segment of our population here is the Hispanic population. We've seen growth here. And if you look at the census figures for the entire state, I believe that if you look at the last 10 years, the Hispanic population has been the fastest growing segment of our population, and it's continuing to grow. So it's a real issue.
In your speech, you endorse legalization of same-sex marriage. Is this a civil rights movement of this era, sir?
Marriage equality is a issue whose time has come. And those who are in the way of it, I think, are standing on the wrong side of history. Because what I have seen just in the last 15 years is a dramatic swing where people are now understanding, as more and more people are forthcoming with what their relationships are, that people deserve to have marriage equality. That's what this is about. It's about marriage equality. And I think particularly with younger people, I think the numbers are just going to continue to grow. And their belief is, look, my next door neighbor or this person, they're in a loving relationship. Why shouldn't they have the same rights as someone else?
Senator Harris and Representative Mason, their bill to raise the minimum wage to $10.10. How much help would that give some of the low-income workers in Milwaukee?
Again, I think the time has come to raise the minimum wage to $10.10 throughout the state of Wisconsin, throughout the nation. And what it's going to do is it's going to make sure that people have a better shot at being able to support their families. What I find disturbing, and my recollection might be wrong on this, but I think, for example, in the first budget that the governor and the legislature passed, it cut things like food stamps. And I don't think you've seen an increase in the homestead tax for a long, in the homestead credit for a while. I think changes were made to the earned income tax credit that make it harder for people to do it. Yeah. So on the one hand, you've got opponents of this saying, well, no, you can't do it through the minimum wage. You have to reward work. Well, the earned income tax credit rewards work. The homestead tax credit really is there to help people who are on fixed incomes. You can't be opposed to this and then not bolster the side that would help and say, well, there's other things we should be doing. The reality is that if you're going to be supporting a family of three or four, doing it on $20,000 is virtually impossible. It's virtually impossible.
In your speech, you talked about the number of empty city homes that have been torn down. How many more?
Well, we probably have 500 homes. Maybe 300 of those are privately held right now, maybe 200 in the city's inventory. That's our last resort option. But there are situations where the property has just gotten into such a case of disrepair that we're going to have to do it. We're dealing with the problem of what we call zombie mortgages right now, where a financial institution files a lawsuit to foreclose on the property. The person gets that notice, and they move. They just say, well, I'm not going to be able to win. I'm moving out of the house. So now the house is empty. The foreclosure action has been begun. And then the bank or financial institution several months later says, well, it's not worth it to us to do this. So they drop the lawsuit. Mm-hmm. The person who lived there is long gone.
Yep.
And the property just more and more into disrepair. So we're doing everything we can here. The city of Milwaukee is putting between $11 and $12 million of our property, primarily property tax dollars, into dealing with this issue. This year, this is not something a mayor likes to do. We like
property
to build
tax
things.
Dollars.
We like to build things, but we have to deal with this issue. And the state came forth with $2 million, which I'm thankful for, but I'm still smarting over the fact that it pocketed $25 million that came from that 49-state settlement with the attorneys general. Right. That's money that should have and still should go to foreclosure-related issues.
What lesson should America learn from Detroit?
That management of a city is important, that even if there's a lot of poverty, you have to manage things well. And I think Milwaukee can really send a message here because we have a lot of poverty in the city, and I'm not proud of that. I'm embarrassed by that. We have the city here with one of the highest percentage of people living in poverty. We're also the city that has the best pension system of any large city in the country, better than any state pension. Mm-hmm.
Almost out of time, just a couple more questions. Your quote in the State of the City speech, for every infant who dies because of an unsafe sleep environment, four infants in our city are dying because of complications of prematurity. Whose responsibility is that to fix this?
We have the point I was making there is we're putting a lot of effort on co-sleeping, and we're going to continue to do that. But the real tough nut to crack is prematurity. And a lot of times this revolves around the woman's health at the time she becomes pregnant. Probably half of the pregnancies are not planned. That doesn't mean they're unwanted, but they're not planned. So physically, emotionally, financially, is that young woman ready to be pregnant? That's part of what we're saying here, is that we have to get to those young women and young men, but primarily young women, at the time when they can be pregnant or become pregnant, and do what we can so their body, their psyche, is in a place where they can carry this baby to term.
That's what you meant. Okay. In your speech, you called the number of 2013 murders too high. Do you think this year will be better, sir, this summer?
I do think it will be better. What happened last year is we were off to a great start. We were on our way to a record low through the end of June. July picked up, but August and September, I think we may have had 36, 38 homicides in those 2 months alone. Maybe 36 was the number.
Okay.
Just in those 2 months alone. And so now we're working closely with the police department, with the faith community. We're off to a much better start this year, even than last year's start, which was a good start. But we just have to be really, really prepared in the summer. One of the interesting things, though, is if you look at the number of people who were victims of homicide last year, a overwhelming number of people knew their assailant. I think the number was 75 out of 106, or maybe 85, one of those numbers, I don't remember. But then the next question that the police had was, well, for the people who were shot but not killed, how many mm-hmm. knew them? And it was maybe 150 out of 550. So you're thinking, well, that doesn't make sense. Well, what's happening there is people aren't telling who shot them. And they're saying, I'm going to take care of it myself. That's what we got to change. Because last year was the first time I saw where the, on average, the homicide victims had more arrests than the suspects.
You know my traditional last question, I always ask it. What's the Brewers' record this year?
The Brewers' going to be 89 and 63. Is that going to be, do I have my numbers right there? It would be 89 and 73, yeah.
Okay. Have you forgiven Ryan Braun?
I'm watching Ryan Braun. I like the fact that he hit a home run in his first at bat.
Yes.
I think he's got some work to do to establish trust. I think a lot of it will depend on how he performs on the baseball diamond and how he interacts with the community. He's going to have a rough time going to visiting parks, but as he said, people have always booed him when he goes to Chicago or Detroit or other places.
So. Have you had a chance to talk to him?
No, I have not.
If you did, what would you say?
I probably wouldn't talk about that issue. I think a lot of people probably talked about that issue with him.
I understand. Milwaukee Bear, Tom Barrett, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate it.